Today, we're going to talk about the 8 retirement pressures. Now, John, welcome to the show today.
Thank you.
Now, these 8 retirement pressures are pressures that I don't think a lot of people really truly understand. Before we jump into these 8, where did you come up with these? How did you come up with these? What is the onus for this podcast?
Well, I've been focusing a lot recently on what's going wrong in long-term retirement plans. And I've kind of come to the conclusion in seeing people over the years, these are financial pressures that I'm seeing constantly coming at people every single day. And we all have them, and how we deal with them and how our strategy is structured is going to help us, you know, overcome these, because this is happening and there's no control over it. And every time I talk about financial pressures, I always kind of go back to the animated wealth curve presentation we did a few years ago, where in 3 minutes and 18 seconds, I basically outline about 38 financial pressures. And the reality is that when a lot of those financial pressures during the working years are alleviated due to income and bonuses, right? And when we hit retirement, well, the income and the bonuses are now gone. And now we're really living off the assets that we've accumulated and the income sources that we're going to receive. And there are these 8 pressures that I really wanted to highlight today, because we're starting to see them show up in a lot of other areas across the world. And it's something that people need to be aware of, that they exist. And I think one of the first one that I really want to discuss is the timing of retirement. We sit back and we say, okay, we're going to retire at 65, or we're going to retire at 70. And those are really wonderful goals. Maybe I want to retire at 55. What happens is, and this stat was recently out there, is that 49% of the current retirees that are out there retired earlier than they planned. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
78% of this group retired due to health or job related reasons. That, you know, if you're building this timeline and you're looking at it, you know, I'm 40 years old, I'm 50 years old, and I've got 15 years to get my kids through college, and I got 15 years to accumulate enough wealth, and then my wife and I are going to sail off into the sunset and have this wonderful retirement. If that gets cut short to 10 years or 15 or 5 years, that's not going to work for most people. And I think this is something that the amount of income that you can generate from a portfolio, the amount of income that you can generate from a simple savings account has deteriorated over the years due to many, many factors. But I think this timing of retirement is something that we're seeing it with a lot of people, that they've been forced to retire either due to, you know, their job being evaporated and they're not getting the replacement job, or health concerns. And there's a lot of stats. I think we did a podcast on disability insurance, and, you know, early retirement for a lot of people that do not have the proper disability insurance. I think I was at a conference recently and they talked about how important it is to maximize your Social Security benefits. And the person was talking, and, you know, it makes sense to do it between 67 and 70, and they're going through all the reasons. And the overwhelming majority of people take it at 62. And the answer was, why? Because they have to. Mm-hmm. All right. So this timing, when we're building a financial plan, the length of time that you can earn and make the amount of money that you're making is not this, you know, finite, unlimited opportunity that we're in 100% control over, and we need to be aware of that. We need to put away money to make sure that this is happening. The sooner that we start, the younger that we start, the better off that we're going to be. This morning I was with clients, and they were talking about the retirement plan that they sponsor for their employees, and the young employees are not putting money away. And they're missing the concept of the time value of money. The sooner you put money away, the better off it's going to be. So this timing is really interesting. The second area that I wanted to highlight is what we've been calling the stealth tax, S-T-E-A-L-T-H, stealth, like the stealth bomber. This is inflation. It's silent. You don't see it. You don't hear it. You can't touch it. But over time, it just simply erodes and erodes and erodes and erodes and erodes your purchasing power. And purchasing power in retirement is the most important part of retirement. You know, if I receive a dollar today and I get a dollar 10 years from now and I get a dollar 20 years from now, that does not buy the same amount of goods. So the dollar has to keep pace with inflation. And inflation is one of these things that is, there's no really right number. You've seen all the government statistics, you've seen all of the government published numbers, and some years there's certain aspects in the inflation calculation. It's a basket of 10 items, and then some years there's things in, and then the next year that product is out. Why? I'm not really sure. Actually, I know, because it was either a high or a low inflation that was going to mess up the actual number. But the point is, if you have a 3.5%, let's just use a 3%. If you have a 3% inflation rate over the first 10 years of retirement, your purchasing power is reduced by 26%. 20 years in, it's 46%. So basically in 20 years, your dollar spends like 50 cents, to put it in easy terms. In order to have the same exact purchasing power, you need to have $2 to equal the 50 cents. And it's kind of, it's interesting. Let's say you're going to put away $50,000 a year for 20 years into an investment, and you're going to make 3%. So $50,000 a year times 20 years is $1 million. With the interest, it's going to compound to around $1,350,000. If you run an inflation impact on that at 3%, that $1,300,000 only buys about $750,000. It's been whittled down by almost 50%. So that is, it's interesting. And if you think back about, and I want to just kind of put this in perspective, it's 1982, the 10-year, 1981, the 10-year treasury is like 15%, CDs were 15%, and you have your $1 million and you have inflation that's running very high back then, but you have your $1 million that's producing $150,000 a year in interest. 20 years later, it's down to 50,000, but inflation has robbed that completely. And this is what people, you know, think back for a second. Your parents bought a house, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. That same house is a lot more expensive today, but the real estate taxes and the utilities and the maintenance on that house is, for a lot of people, is just taking all of their spare assets. So the stealth tax is something that people really don't factor inflation into their thinking. And there's a belief that, you know, the stock market will take care of the inflation. And when you factor on the sequence of return or market volatility, that's not a given in a strategy. Meaning we kind of have to have other things in our financial strategy that are not market dependent in order to generate this extra money from an inflationary standpoint. So stealth tax, you need to understand that inflation is coming. You have no control over it. When you go to the grocery store and you pick out your sliced cheese, it's more expensive than it was last year, and there's less cheese in the package. So who stole my cheese, right? Longevity. People are living longer and longer than we've ever expected people to live. When the Social Security age was set at 65, the average person lived to about 66. Today, there's a 75% probability that a male will live to 78, a female will live to 81, and it's amazing how long that we're going to live. And there's a lot of information out there that's basically saying if you can keep your body at the same level that it is today, there are things coming that will be introduced that could freeze you in your current age and have you live a lot longer. Most people's perspective is, oh my God, because they're looking at it as the perspective of seeing people that are sick today. But if you can live the longevity, a quality, wonderful life, it really is wonderful, but it requires a tremendous amount of capital, much more than your traditional plan might have thought it was going to need, because now the time frame that you need the money has gone up dramatically. So longevity, when we build the financial strategy, what we're trying to do is we basically put it at 100 plus or minus, and there's no control over that outcome. So your plan should work to 100 plus. If it doesn't, and you're running out of money at age 85, and you're going to live to 100, that last 15 years is pretty terrific. I'm just kidding. It's pretty terrible. Okay. The fourth pressure is a combination of sequence of returns versus the withdrawal rate. And these are two interchanged conversations that happen on an ongoing basis. And the sequence of return is, I'm going to retire in a year, and there's no guarantee as to what those returns are going to be moving forward. Most people are looking back, and they're looking back over a long period of time, and they're looking at different asset classes and saying, look, this did this and that did that, so I should put my money here. And if you had the unfortunate set of circumstances of retiring in 1999, and you're looking back over the last 20 years, stock markets did very well despite a few blips in the road, but they did very, very well during that time frame. Fast forwarding, if you were taking out a 5 or 6% withdrawal rate because you suffered two 50% downturns in the market, you actually ran out of money prior to that. So the only way to adapt would be to change your withdrawal rate or have a more diversified strategy in that particular strategy. So the sequence of returns, most financial plans lack basically options and backups and redundancies to make sure that if the market is down, if interest rates collapse, all these moving variables, do they have a contingency plan that's going to help them get through that sideways or long extended market? And this is something that there's a lot of conversation out there about it, but I'm not sure if people really, it's kind of, yes, I get it, but I don't get it until I'm really going through it. It's kind of like the lessons our parents want us to learn for us without us having to go through them. And then we had to learn them ourselves. Have you ever had that experience, Matt?
Absolutely.
All right, good. So the sequence of returns, we've done a lot of information on this. We have a lot of, concepts on this that we've put together for our clients so they could see it. The strategy is going to really control how you work through the sequence of returns. And there's no guarantee, moving forward as to what sequence that you're going to receive and how the markets will play out. The big one that I see happening is when you have a couple, they're married, there's pension income, there's two social securities, there might be benefits being provided by the previous employer, and then the first person passes. And then there's a loss of one of the social securities, which for a lot of people that could be a significant amount of money. The pension benefit, this is shocking to a lot of people. You might have a pension benefit that you elected to take $1,000 a month in your pension or $5,000 a month, and it's life only, which means when the first person passes who was the person that's receiving the pension, that would evaporate and there would be zero left for the spouse. Or the spouse might only receive $25,000 or $2,500 a month from that $5,000 a month. Or there's basically five options. There's the joint survivor option where it's a 50%. There's a joint survivor 100%. There's a joint survivor 75% and the life only option. There's depending upon where you work and what system that you're in, those pension benefit payments are going to be, uniquely different. But what happens is when you think about the amount of Social Security that's coming in, the pension, the value of the benefits, like the health insurance benefits that are being received, that changes dramatically after the first person passes. So we lose the Social Security, we might lose half the pension, we might lose valuable health insurance benefits, and then the granddaddy or the final kick in the teeth is now that person was in a married filing joint tax bracket, and now they're in a single taxpayer bracket, potentially paying a higher tax at a higher level. So it's kind of like this. And when you're looking at a wealth plan, these factors get discounted. People don't really understand the value of these recurring revenue sources. the Social Security is getting an inflation hedge, supposedly, but a lot of pensions are flatlining. So you elect a pension today, you're going to get $5,000, a month today, 10 years from now, 20 years from now. So we need to really understand in your financial strategy what these benefits are, and then on the first death, what the impact on the wealth is. Because we don't know when that death is going to occur. If it happens earlier on, that's devastating. If it happens early on and there's a massive long-term care expense and other capital is eaten up, that's a bad strategy also. If it happens at age 100 and it's kind of simultaneous, it may not be that bad. It really depends upon the sequence of the outcome, and we don't know when that's going to happen. The sixth problem that I see is the tax drag. And the tax drag comes from a couple of different areas. The first one that people get very angry about is the required minimum distribution. If you have an IRA, a qualified retirement plan, you hit 70.5, the IRS says you must take out a certain amount of money. And if you don't take it out, you're going to get a 50% penalty. For a lot of people, that pushes them into a higher tax bracket, triggering more taxation on all of their investments. Or 100% of your retirement money is in qualified retirement plans, and you're taking out, you got $1 million and you're taking out $50,000 a year, and today you're in a 20% bracket, and tomorrow you're in a 25% tax bracket, okay, because the tax law changed. That extra 5% is less money now that shows up in your paycheck or in your net withdrawal from your IRA, not really a paycheck, right? So the tax coming in is a serious problem. Then what we're seeing is, depending on the income sources, the Social Security goes from being tax-free to 85% of it being taxable. And what we also see is people accumulating money in taxable investments that are compounding taxation. This is something that we talk about all the time, is people focus on the miracle of compound interest, but what they ignore is the evil step twin, which is compound taxation, which is simultaneously eroding capital. So in retirement, the tax drag really needs to be focused on and need to understand is, how are your assets going to be taxed? A common thing I see people do is they retire, and because there's no required minimum distribution from the IRA, they defer taking money out to 70.5, and they spend their taxable money down. And then they get hit with the RMDs, and they don't have any liquidity, and they're actually paying more taxes than they would have if they didn't defer it for longer. They could actually, take money out at 65 and pay less taxes based upon the spread. But that's unique to the individual, right? You have to understand what that individual's income sources are and what their tax brackets are. I think this is something that's really, really important, is the rising healthcare costs that we're seeing. And there's a statistic that's put out by the Employee Benefit Research Institute that basically says a couple who is 65 in the year 2020 will need $365,000 to pay for Medigap, Medicare premiums, and other out-of-pocket expenses during their retirement, not including long-term care. And I don't think people really factor this into their retirement plan. They kind of look at their burn rate or their, hey, we spend $5,000 a month, and all of a sudden that's, everything. But now you got another $5,000 to $10,000 a year in the Medicare premiums and the Medigap premiums and unreimbursed expenses. And that's a tremendous impact on your wealth. I mean, $365,000, that's tremendous. And I don't, it doesn't seem to be getting any cheaper for anybody. So when you start thinking about all the premiums that are being paid for the basic care, and then when a long-term care event occurs, in addition to the $365,000, you're talking about somewhere in today's range, somewhere between $7,000 and $15,000 a month, depending on the level of care that you need for a long-term care facility. The amount of capital required for, the longevity side of this thing that we talked about earlier is unbelievable. So rising healthcare costs, definite needs to be a major factor of any retirement plan and needs to be considered. And my feeling is if you factor on it and you say, okay, we're going to assume that we're going to spend all this money on the Medicare premiums and this $365,000 and you don't spend it, it ends up in your pocket. That's a good thing. If you don't factor it and you think you needed $5,000 a month, but now you need six as a result of these unreimbursed expenses, the plan's not going to work. The plan's going to be have too much pressure and it's going to run out of money. The eighth financial pressure is something that we see at all ages, and it's the family pressure. And I see this consistently over and over again in meeting my retired clients, meeting new people that are coming in, that kids, adult children, grandkids, there's a need for capital, and mom or dad and mom and dad, aunt and uncle are basically funding things for their family, for their kids, out of their cash flows, out of their retirement income sources. So, and sometimes this can be the tune of $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $10,000 a month just to keep people moving. And that pressure, you know, when you're building a retirement plan and you're 50 years old, because I'm 50 in April, and we sit here and we say, okay, I've got four kids, and by the time I'm 70, my four kids should all be, you know, launched and out there in the world. So all those big expenses that I'm going through now with the colleges and the weddings that are coming up and all those great stuff, it's all behind me. And then all of a sudden, child A, B, C, or D, in no order of ranking, basically needs money. And that's a pressure that most people can't say no to, but that comes with consequences. And that's the thing that I don't think people really get, is that every financial pressure and every decision that we make today, tomorrow, and next year has a consequence that needs to be understood. It needs to be evaluated. And those consequences come in the form of more risk, more taxes, less risk, less taxes. You know, there is a pro and con to every financial decision. And here's what's interesting is you don't want to think about, you know, the financial plan is some, you know, it's not a guarantee of what's going to happen. Because if you think about these eight or nine things, you might not be affected by the timing of retirement. You might have a good strategy for inflation. You might live to normal age, or you might have enough capital to live longer. The sequence of return might be clean. The loss of a spouse, you know, perfect world, you both go within hours of each other. Your taxes stay low in your tax efficient plan, and you're not subject to those rising healthcare costs, and you don't have any family pressure. Just one change in the variable. And then those outside forces that we talk about, which are tax rates and, you know, outside, you know, the all the pressures that we listed in one of the last podcasts, where you have everybody gunning to take all of your money from you, you know, the government, the corporations, the financial institutions, and, you know, through all these wonderful, you know, planned obsolescence and technological change. If I wanted to add a ninth pressure to this, I would discuss that inflation, the stealth tax, is one thing. But the second is planned obsolescence and technological change, which are two different factors. And planned obsolescence is, I bought a dishwasher. It should last for 15 years. It's 4 years old, and I got to get a new one. It wears out, right? How many people in 1990 put a cell phone data plan upgrades, you know, into their retirement plan? Nobody had any of these things. And I, you know, technology's coming at a tremendous rate, right? These are pressures that are going to, that you can't see coming. That's what I'm really trying to say, is you can't see what's coming, and you don't know the sequence in which is coming at you. And the philosophy comes down to, in the present moment, where my feet are, where I'm sitting, where I'm standing. Actually, I'm standing. I'm sitting. What can I do today to increase my savings rate? How do I use this new tax law to even increase that even further? How do I structure my current assets so that, based upon my current income and my current income streams, how do I design the best possible strategy so I save the right amount of capital? The, you know, we talked about savings. We talked about savings rate, and that people really don't save enough money. And those interest, those savings rates are down below, you know, somewhere between you know, depending on who's doing the stats, somewhere between 2 and 5%. Well, it really needs to be 15%. And I think this is some of the factors that we really, you know, in today's strategy, if you can put away enough money, live very comfortably, you can hit these goals and be ready for all of this pressure that's coming at us, not only today, but when we hit retirement, we have less resources. You know, the earned income is the major resource that I want to focus on. So in summary, the financial pressures that are really geared towards retirement, a good plan is going to try and attempt to overcome the timing of retirement and, you know, have the plan self-completing in the event that somebody's disabled. It's going to factor in inflation. It's going to hope that we live well and enjoyable well into our hundreds. It's going to realize that withdrawal rate and sequence of returns are super important to the, you know, capital lasting. Realize that somebody's going to die first in the household. And what's the impact when that person dies? The taxes that are coming. How is my wealth put in the right place so that I minimize the taxes today, minimize the taxes during the accumulation phase, and minimize the tax during the income or withdrawal phase? Most financial plans do the exact opposite. It's increasing current and future taxes. Rising healthcare costs, how do I protect against that? And this family pressure, that's a tough one. Because you can't predict what's going to happen.
Right.
So, but having extra capital and not having to live off 100% of the money that I've accumulated is probably one of the best ways to push through this. So that's what I wanted to put out today. I wanted people to really just focus on, from the retirement perspective, what they're facing and what's coming.
Well, I think those 8 retirement pressures, well, and you kind of added the 9th one there, but those retirement pressures are things that people really need to be paying attention to. So, John, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
And for John Smallwood and everybody at John Smallwood's office, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
Welcome to the end of the video. Smallwood Wealth Management is an investment advisor representative. The opinions expressed by Smallwood Wealth Management and guests on this show are their own. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented for this educational purposes only. Moreover, no listener should assume that any discussions or information presented serves as a receipt of or substitute for personalized advice from Smallwood Wealth Management or from any other investment professional, and is not intended as an offer of solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Smallwood Wealth Management is not a law firm or an accounting firm, and no portion of this presentation should be interpreted as legal, accounting, or tax advice. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as a recommendation appropriate for any individual. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Thank you for listening.